Now, I think I've said sufficient on the world economy. Except this one other element that we have to deal with. The bourgeois economists, they're like a drowning man that's clutching at straws, looking for... And they are going to, well, okay, they, because they can't deny it. Now, there'll be a crisis in America, okay. But it won't affect the rest of the world. Asia will save us. Now that's just a joke. And they contradict themselves. In the past, they argued correctly that the world has achieved this huge degree of integration. The whole world was interconnected, and that's perfectly true. And now they turn around and say, well, no, but there'll be a crisis in America, it won't affect the rest of the world. Which is a self-evident contradiction, it's a joke. It'll have a profound effect on the rest of the world. I don't have the time, I think some of the figures were dealt with the documents. But there's absolutely no way that China and Asia can prop up the rest of the world if America goes down. There's no way that that can happen. Oh, I forgot to give the figures for the American locomotive industry, which is traditionally one of the main points of this American manufacturing. In 2007, the sales of cars and light trucks in the USA fell by 2.5%. Fell by 2.5% to a figure of 16.1 million. This year they're predicting a figure of 15.5 million, in other words, a further decline. Which means that big companies like General Motors, Fords, and Chrysler are all in difficulties now. Bob Nardelli, who's the chap who's put in charge of turning Chrysler around, of improving Chrysler, was recently asked, is Chrysler bankrupt? He was asked. I think he must have been a bit drunk when he answered the question. Because he said, technically, no. But operationally, yes. And he added, this is an incredible statement. The only thing that keeps us from going into bankruptcy is the $10 billion investors have entrusted us with. If I was a Chrysler investor, I would withdraw my investment the following day after that statement. But of course, the answer is this. Again, it's not a question of an academic disagreement. It's what it means in practice. What it means is that they must cut capacity more. Chrysler already cut 13,000 jobs. Now they want to cut 10,000 more. And that's a general picture. Everywhere you see the same picture. China, I could say some things on China, without going in deep. We have to have a special discussion on China. There isn't time. Now, perhaps at the World Congress we can have a discussion on China. But there's no question that that China has had the highest, China actually has had the highest rate of growth of any country in history over the last 30 years. Fact. It is the world's largest producer and consumer of steel. Yes, steel. And the second biggest producer and consumer. Yes. And the second biggest user of energy in the world. Astonishing figures. In 10 years, it is stated that they could overtake the USA as the biggest economy in the world. But we have to treat that prediction with due caution. You have to be, because they said the same thing in the past about Japan. 20 years ago, they said the same thing about Japan. But Japan then went into a crisis which lasted for 10 years. The economists are very fond of extrapolating tendencies on the basis of past figures. It's not a correct method. Yes, now all of this is true. Yes, but the entry of China into the world capitalist economy means that the Chinese economy is now completely subject to the ups and downs of the world economy. It will be affected by a downturn in this. How could it not be affected? It's already being affected. For example, the production of toys and women's shoes are key exports for the south of China. But as I've said, there's increasing inflation in China and increasing wages, actually. With the result that already they're saying that some factories will have to close. This is before the recession. There's enormous tension now between America and the EU and China. Which is ironical when you consider all this damned hypocrisy, all this demagogy about free market economy and free trade. Yes. They're all in favor of free trade when they're doing the exporting and somebody else is doing the importing. They're all in favor of free trade. But when it's other people that are doing the exporting and they're doing the importing, they don't like it. They suddenly become protectionist. The Europeans and the Americans have been putting pressure on China to revalue the yuan, their currency. Actually, the yuan has been increasing in value. It's increased about 13% against the dollar in the last 12 months. It's not enough for the Americans. The Americans are demanding more. Oh, yes, the figure for inflation in China is quite striking. It rose 6.9% in November of last year. That's an astonishing figure. It's too much. No, I think it's an annual rate. One month, that would be too much. It's the annual rate. The Americans have been threatening. They've been threatening to introduce tariffs. China's current account surplus, external surplus,
superávit de la cuenta corriente de China,
which reflects its rate with the, its relations with the rest of the world, has increased from 4% of the gross domestic product in 2004. To 11% in 2007. And that's in spite of the fall of the dollar and the rise of the yuan. So although the yuan is increasing and the dollar is falling, as far as these figures are concerned, as far as the Americans are concerned, the yuan is still undervalued. By at least 30 to 40%, that's what they say. They want the Chinese to be valued by 30.
The cheek.
And by the way, China, those who say, well, exports are not important for China, that is false. I've got the figures here, actually. China's exports in 2001 were 20% of GDP. In 2007, they were 40% of China's GDP. Now, I have to give an issue of caution here. You can interpret these figures in different ways. They're matters of dispute, actually. Yeah, matters of dispute. These figures are undoubtedly too high. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. There are other figures I've given speak for themselves. What is absolutely clear is that exports play an important part of the Chinese economy, and that China will be undoubtedly severely affected by even by a downturn in America. I've got other figures on China, but we can discuss that again. Now again, I must insist on this question. Because in the past, I think you can have quite sterile discussions, actually, on economics. Technical discussions which may or may not be of interest. May or may not be of interest. But they miss the point. The point is what effect this has on the class struggle. That's the point that has got to be ascertained. Now, we can admit this. There's no argument about it. There's been a huge development of world trade. The world economy has been growing at a record rate for the last 5 years. And yet, at the same time, there's been an enormous intensification of the pressure on the working class in all countries. And I repeat, that's in the best period. When you'd think, if you have a rational and not a dialectical frame of mind, two are not the same. If you have a formal logical frame of mind, shall we say, you might say, well, look, they're growing in Latin America. Why don't they improve living standards? You missed the point entirely. They're growing because they've attacked living standards. I had a very striking example from Japan, where they've got a word. The word is karoshi, which means death by overwork. No, death. The people are working themselves to death. People are working themselves to death. Japan is not a poor country. I've got this. Here's an interesting quote. There's some interesting figures. There are court cases. People take employers to court for this crime of killing their employees through excessive hours of work.
Llevar a la muerte por trabajo a estos trabajadores.
Sometimes the applications are successful and they pay compensation. Sometimes they're not successful.
En algunos casos ganan y en otros no.
In 1988, only 4% of applications were granted by the courts. In 2005, 40% were accepted. There was one case reported recently of a chap, poor chap, there's a Uchino, his name is. Kenichi Uchino, who's 30 years of age, who collapsed and died. And he wasn't a manual worker, he was an quality inspector. He collapsed and died at 4 o'clock in the morning. After working 80 hours of unpaid overtime.
Después de haber trabajado 80 horas de horas extras sin habérselas pagado.
And this is a common occurrence in Japan. The hours of unpaid overtime in Japan, I've got them here, per year. No, I tell a lie. The hours of overtime, not unpaid. Are 1,780 hours per year. Overtime. Yes. 1,780 hours. In the US, in the USA it's 1,800. That's more. In Germany it's 1,440. But in Japan, you're compelled to work in addition to that extra hours without pay. Some estimates are more than 60 hours a week. In some cases. Like this chap. No, 60 hours work total working week. Now, in addition to that, as the common, in all countries, there's a tendency towards casualization, part-time working. And this is leading to serious problems, which have been piled up now over a long time. In Europe, the rate of growth is expected to fall. In Germany, which was the powerhouse of Europe, it is expected to fall from 2.6% in last year to less than 2% this year. According to the Kiel Institute for World Economy, it predicts 1.1%. For Germany. Now what does that mean? It means rising unemployment again. It means a tax on living standards. In Germany and all other countries. In Britain, we just had the figures for the Christmas sales, which is normally a high point of the economy. Which was a disaster. Led to fall in the shares of Marks and Spencer's, which was a big shop. And as I've said, Brown is threatening to the workers that they must accept wage increases below the rate of inflation for 3 years. The same in all other countries. In France, Sarkozy's won the election. And he's bragging. I think he thinks he's Tarzan. Tarzan of the apes, you know.
He found Jane now.
Yes, he's found Jane, that's right. That's right.
Se cree que es Tarzan.
Yes. But he was going to attack the workers and cut the 35-hour week and do this and do that. And the French workers, of course, with their usual marvelous tradition, immediately staged strikes, demonstrations. I noticed that Sarkozy's support now has collapsed from about 60, or dropped sharply anyway. 17% fall, that's right. From 65 to 40 something. In Italy, you had this marvelous, where there's been strike after strike, general strike after general strike. You had a marvelous demonstration of 500,000 workers in Rome. And in Little Denmark, the commas will forgive me for saying Little Denmark, but it's not a very big country. What's the population of Denmark, Marie? 5 million. What's the population of Italy? Sandro, what is the population of Italy? 60 million. That's 10 times more.
The same as Scotland.
10 times more. Same as Scotland, yeah. 5 million. But in Denmark, anyway, there was a demonstration of 100,000 against cuts, which is much bigger than Italy, proportionately. In Germany also, there have been strikes already in the railways and other sections. In Greece, there was a general strike in December, which the commons reported, and even in Switzerland. Where's the comment from Switzerland? Daniel, is it? Daniel? There was the building strike, no? I don't know how did that end? I don't know. Well, you can say what we came in. But there was a strike anyway. In other words, what does this mean? You see, that even in a boom, the bourgeois can't tolerate. Never mind about improvements in living standards, they cannot tolerate the existence of the concessions they made in the past. In all countries, they're attacking pensions. In Mexico, again, that's a separate subject. But there's been a big struggle on the question of pensions, which I think is continuing, which is still continuing. In Mexico, it was extraordinary. You had a revolutionary situation in Mexico 18 months ago over the question of López Obrador, which again, only our comrades understood that question. Sects were messing around, they took an abstentionist position. Millions of Mexicans went onto the streets. And the sect said, oh, the PRD is a bourgeois party, it's a bourgeois party. Well, I think that personally, I think that it probably is a reason something we could discuss. But there's one question we can be sure about. How many? Cuántos había en la calle? 2 millones? 3 millones? 3 million Mexicans were on the streets. Were they 3 million bourgeois? I don't think there are 3 million bourgeois in the world. There were 3 million workers and peasants. But of course, the sex can't see this. It's bourgeois parties, bourgeois, they can't see this. Now, because of the failure of leadership, because you can't turn the workers on and off like a tap. So it was a marvelous movement, but it couldn't succeed on the basis of that. Either he'd take power or else he would be defeated. Calderon took over the government. He won the elections. Yes, and now he's sorry that he won the elections. Because Mexico is in a state of, it's still in a state of pre-revolutionary ferment, actually, in my opinion. And if there's a country in the world that will be hit hard by a downturn in the States, it will be Mexico. Whole areas of Mexico depend upon the remittances of foreign of immigrants in America. And now they're talking about expelling the immigrants, you know. Any downturn in the States will affect Mexico very seriously. There'll be an explosive situation, and Calderon is not going to last, in my opinion. He won't last. Now, it's very difficult to create a revolutionary organization after the revolution has begun. In Venezuela, it's been tough, it's been difficult. But in Pakistan, we built a strong organization before the revolution started. That's the point. And in Mexico also, we have a strong organization of cadres in the very early stages of the revolution. And I think after Pakistan, Mexico is the section with the biggest, together with Venezuela, it's a different question. We must follow these sections very closely. But to return to Europe, in all the countries of Europe, class struggle is on the order of the day, in my opinion. Even if there's a slowdown and not a recession, as the economist correctly says, it's a technical question. We're not interested in technical questions. One thing is certain. In all the countries of the world, especially Europe, there'll be attempts to cut and cut and cut. You think the workers are going to accept that? They're going to smile and sit back and say, yes, okay, take what you want. It's not going to happen. There'll be an explosion of the class struggle in one country after the other. And if it develops into a recession, which is all, certain at a certain stage, in my view, we can have a situation similar to what we had after 1973-74. The next period, in my opinion, will be more similar to that than the last period. And that will have enormous effects in all the organizations. And really speaking, it's a paradox. It's a monstrous thing, actually. Well, there's a problem here. What's the problem? There's only one problem. It's not a problem with the working class. As some people like to think, oh, it's because the workers are backward. It's because the workers are not revolutionary. Because the workers are not ready to fight, you see? They say that in relation to Venezuela. They say that now. They try to blame the workers for the loss of this referendum. It's monstrous. What more can you ask of the Venezuelan workers or the Bolivian workers or the Mexican? What more can you ask of them? Or the Italian workers? But the problem is this. That those organizations which were historically created by the working class to change society have become transformed into monstrous obstacles in the way of socialism. Monstrous obstacles. That's the problem. There is no other problem. In Italy, you have the most monstrous situation. After all, the Italian Communist Party was the biggest Communist Party in Europe, outside of the Eastern Bloc. And the Italian working class have wonderful revolutionary traditions. Similar to the Spanish workers and the French workers. And they have the most disgusting, rotten, stinking leadership you could possibly imagine for decades, actually. Yes, and in all countries, the workers' leaders are arguing a purely bourgeois position. No, in every country. They don't even, no, they put forward bourgeois ideas. It didn't say they were bourgeois. Didn't say they were bourgeois. That either in the past, at least in words, they stood for socialism and communism. At least on the 1st of May, they would make some little gesture. Didn't change anything substantial. They still carried out the same pro-bourgeois policies. But now the degeneration has reached such a level that in Italy, the former Communist Party has now formed a bourgeois party in alliance with other bourgeois elements. I think some of the Italian communists are surprised at this. I was also surprised that you were surprised. How could you be surprised? This is the, I don't say Alexander was surprised. Some comrades were surprised. Some comrades were surprised. You were also surprised. Well, I'm even more surprised. Estoy más sorprendido todavía. How could you be surprised? How could you be surprised? This is the logical result of generations of the most abject betrayal and degeneration. Disgusting. Starting with Togliatti and continuing with Berlinguer's historical compromise. It's perfectly logical. The only surprise, which is not so surprising actually, if you know the case, is that Blair attempted to do this in Britain, and it's logical, he attempted to do this in Britain, but he failed. Because of the historical link of the Labour Party with the trade unions, which he tried to break and he couldn't break it. You know, it's another discussion. I don't want to take up too much time. But this is a logical. And by the way, this should benefit us. It should benefit RC and it should benefit us. But in all the countries, they're pursuing a bourgeois, even if they're not bourgeois parties, they're pursuing a bourgeois policy. They've become absolute obstacles. And therefore some people draw the conclusion, well, the organisations is not the thing, it doesn't matter. What did you set up a revolutionary party? That's the conclusion of the sects. In all countries, they tried this, and in all countries they failed. And we'll predict now that in the next period, these mass organizations again, the mass organizations reflect the movement of society, the movement of the class. They don't exist in a vacuum. In Britain, for example, the Labour Party has gone far to the right. So you would think that it would be a very good moment to set up a revolutionary party. Well, they've tried this, they've tried it several times in the last few years. It's completely failed. And the reason is this. The workers are not active with anybody. They're not active in the Labour Party. They're not active in the PSOE, they're not active in the Izquierda Unida. Or in the RC. Where are they active? They're not active anywhere. They haven't yet begun to move in a serious way. That's the point. They're in their houses, looking at the television. Yes, but that cannot last. How much was that in real time?
Oh, God.
What isn't that? That's right. They're not active in any organization. But once they do begin to act, as showed in Pakistan, and by the way, in Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto completely betrayed. He betrayed to imperialism. That was the argument of Yossi Fass. Oh, we must leave now because Benazir Bhutto is sold out. We must leave now. Leave the PP. And we said, we replied to him in good Hebrew, go and take a walk. It didn't stop the movement in Pakistan. Through the PPP. Same in Mexico, through the PRD. It must be through the mass organizations only for one reason. Because there's no alternative, there is nothing else. From a working class point of view, that's a perfectly clear argument. And by the way, particularly in Italy now, we'll have a very explosive situation. Italy is the sick man of Europe. The Italian bourgeoisie has got no alternative but to plunge the knife in deep. The reason why they've pushed Veltroni to setting up this new party is because they didn't have a party. The old Christian democracy collapsed. They didn't have a party. And Berlusconi failed. And therefore they're going to pass the poisoned cup to Veltroni. Who will be very popular, by the way. Initially. Or you can get a big majority. The RC's vote can go down quite sharply. In the short run. But this government of the centre will be soon exposed. The only reason for having Veltroni in power is to implement a policy of deep cuts. There is no other reason. And that in Italy, you'll see what's going to happen. There'll be an explosion of strikes, of demonstrations, of general strikes. And a ferment in both in the trade unions and in the RC. Which will open big opportunities for our tendency. On condition that we remain firm. that we don't vacillate. That we don't give way to pressure. In Spain, Spain is a separate matter again, but even in Spain, you see an enormous polarization to the left and the right. The language which is now being used by the right wing, the PPP and the church, It's strikingly similar to the language they used in the 1930s. The process has been delayed a bit because the Spanish economy has been doing quite well, but that's going to turn into its opposite. And in Spain, of course, also we have a strong organization with roots in the working class, and above all, a base in the youth, which is the key everywhere. Now, what I've said about these few countries in Europe, it can be applied to every country in Europe, Austria, to every other country. We must be prepared. And above all, we must build the organization, build our forces, so that we become a serious factor in the situation. Incidentally, how many communists knew there had been factory occupations in Canada? I didn't know till recently. In Canada also there'll be movements.